Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we are celebrating Andrew Lloyd Webber. With Phantom of the Opera set to close on Broadway, I have been having a handful of what I've been calling Phantom Cats on the podcast. So today my guest has been performing with Phantom of the Opera, but before that, he was Bustopher Jones and Gus and Growl Tiger in many productions of Cats. I am very excited to have him. So welcome, Richard Poole, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm glad to represent the Cat Nation.
Cat Nation, you know, as you said, it's been years since you've done this. And also, I have to start by now, you told me before we started that this is your first podcast. I'm honored to have you and that your first podcast is going to be talking about the wrong Jellicle choice. So what a way to kick off the podcasting career.
Absolutely. Getting back my revenge.
Yeah, I love it. So, yeah, I love that. And, of course, Gus is ready. Let's start with your history of Cats, because you were, and I'm gonna read these in order. You were in the U.S. Tour number one, the U.S. Tour number three, the U.S. Tour number four, and then the original Broadway production. So you predate the 1998 movie and, you know, all the, you know, the way that a lot of people got to know Cats, because you were in the very, very early stages of it. So what was your introduction to the music?
To Cats?
To Cats, yes.
Well, I saw it probably maybe a year into its run. And I really thought that there was really nothing in the show for me. But I wanted to do it because it was a hot item. And I wanted to be in something that was, you know, going to give me at least some work for a while. So by the time I got hired for the show, I had already auditioned for the show for four times. And then the fifth time I auditioned, they had told me in my previous auditions that I looked too young. And I just didn't know what that means, because, you know, you're wearing 15 pounds of makeup and a yak wig. And I'm going, seriously, I'm not too young. You know, I'm too young. Anyway, I grew a beard and I got hired for a replacement in the first National in Chicago in January of 1986. And that was my beginning of my cat's world. So I did that for about 8 months, and then they were beginning a new tour, the third National, and they cast me to originate Gus in that company, and I did the complete run of that company until September of 88. So that tour ran for 2 years.
So you're the first person I've talked to on the first tour. And I'm curious to hear, because this is like from what I've read about it, it's the first time that this, you know, you did long stays at places, but it was the first time that this was out in big cities, you know, like this is still relatively new. So I always love to hear, like, what was the reaction to something so unique at the time coming around the country? Like, I'm from the Midwest, so I always just think, like, what would happen the first time Cats came to Indiana? And what would that have been like? What would that reaction have been like? So you're really bringing this to a lot of the country pre-social media, pre a lot of these things. Like, how did the world react when you brought this from city to city?
Well, Cats was a phenomenon in itself, because it was something that people had never seen. I mean, the fact that a musical could succeed with, you know, adults dressed up like cats on a stage, I mean, it was, and when it became, you know, became a hit, we would go to, you know, like Chicago is where I joined the first National, and it had already been there for probably 3 months. And we were there for nearly a year at the Schubert there. And every time that people would know or be hinted at that we were part of the Cats company, they would just be effusive in their, you know, excitement about it. And it was one of those things that you could actually, you know, get a pretty good table at a restaurant by dropping the C word. And so we did that a lot. But Cats had, I mean, people were blown away. We were, you know, we were sold out the whole run. Andrew Lloyd and Sarah Brightman came out there and visited the company. It was incredible. You know,
that
it's a first. It was
that.
A first natural of that company, and it was a lot of that company came to Broadway eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So it, incredible talents.
I can just imagine you walking up to, you know, a Chicago restaurant and just be like, I am Busta for Jones, and I would like a table for four right now.
Well, they wouldn't say it like that, but you know, you could say I'm in, you know, Cats, and I, you know, these are my friends from out of town. I wonder if you can, you know, give us, you know, an accommodation. That'd be very, very, very helpful. So it was nice. It was a nice perk to have. But yeah. Cats was, especially in the early days, was a hot ticket. Everybody wanted to see it. They wanted to know what the fuss was about. People that couldn't get to New York. So it was great. It was an incredible time. And I didn't take over the role of Gus until I went into the third. So I was not contracted for Gus on the First National. I was only an understudy there.
And you're in the Cats chorus, right?
I was in the booth. Mm-hmm. I sang that the whole time. Yeah.
So then you, you know, originate it in the third tour. So you get to kind of go on for Busta for Jones, Gus and Growl Tiger. I always love to hear, like, I've talked to actually a lot of that cast. We did a live event, Broadway reopened and had a lot of fun with the US tour three, which is strange because it still feels like one of the main, like, true tours. It was the real first tour.
Right.
But when you kind of had that experience and you're really getting to do all the rehearsals, all the stuff versus coming in as a replacement, I want to go to, like, what were you told? Like, what were you given as backstory? Do you remember here's how you need to kind of think and play about the Busta for Jones and Gus characters?
Well, I had gone on many times in the First National already when I originated the role. So I knew what they wanted directorially. So one of the assistant directors became the full director for the Third National. And we, you know, it was a great time, a great breath. And we all rehearsed for the first time, you know, learning the show. And I was requested not to tell people initially that I had done the show before because they wanted me to go through the process with everybody. And so, you know, you start out in the process of Cats, you know, on all fours and you do all that. And so you learn how to grow from a feline to a human to a hybrid, you know, so you can make the show work for you. But we start out, you know, like Cats on the floor, and we evolve till we can, you know, stand on two legs and sing like humans.
So such an interesting thing to just hear you say. And I was like, you just basically trained to be a cat, and then you had to figure out, then you had to, it's that hybrid piece that makes it so interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, because we were told specifically that we were never to meow. We could never make a meow sound. We could never make a hiss sound. All, you know, the sound, everything that we did was based more on a physical representation than a vocal representation, because it would muddy everything else that, you know, Mr. Weber was trying to get across. So,
it's such a fascinating piece of the training for that. And then you go on tour, and this is, again, the first time that this is reaching a lot of cities. And I think you had, and I've heard about a ton of the different experiences, and you did, I remember you did a Broadway Cares, or, you know, you did a fundraiser for the AIDS epidemic and all things that was happening too. But that was a three-ish year, I think two or three year, pretty robust and lengthy tour. And it's the same kind of questions. Like, I know you were in Chicago for a while and you could get wherever reservation you want, but what was the reaction city to city? Like, was this also the first time most of these people had a chance to see it if they didn't go to New York or London?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was the hot ticket. It was, you know, it's the first time that Cats had ever played Chicago. And it was, you know, we, like I said, we were sold out all the time. And it was incredible.
So let's pivot to the U.S. Tour 4. So this is now 5 years later from the right. tour. And I know you got to do a couple things in between, but what kind of, you know, what had you come back to this new tour? Was it an itch to be Gus again, or was it
no?
Obviously, just the next step of the career.
No, I had been in Europe for a year, and I came back in December, and December of 92. So I think it was March of 93, Tara Rubin calls me and asks if I would be interested in coming out and do a paternity leave cover. She says, you won't have to go on. All I have to do is sing in the booth and whatever. And I said, yeah, no worries. So I went out there and did that. I think the contract was for like 17 weeks or something like that. And so during that time, I went on and performed at understudy rehearsals and that sort of stuff, and went on several times. And then they offered me the contract, and I did that for a year through December of 94, and then they brought me to Broadway in December of 94. So I went out there with no intention of doing it. I did it as a favor for Tara Rubin, the casting person, and you know, and I had no intention of staying there, because as far as I was concerned, I'd already done as much as I could do. And I said, once I did done 2 years on that Cats tour, I said, I'll never do another show for 2 years. I'm too itchy to be creative to do something like that. I can't. I know.
I told you now.
Funny considering that. Yeah, I didn't realize that once you grab that brass ring, you want to hold on to it pretty tight. Yeah, you know,
doing that.
It feels like doing a long run. Doing a long run of anything gives you the flexibility and the freedom to actually plan things, you know, that you can feel like that you can have more of a life rather than a, you know, a struggling actor. And in the 80s, you know, those were the shows that were running, you know, and they kept running and running and running and running and running. So I had no intention of going back into Cats, but when they offered me the Broadway thing, I said, oh yeah, I'll go back home. You know, I'll do that. So that's when I came back home, and I didn't go back out on the road anymore. I'd been on the road for about 15 years with various shows. So
it's refreshing to be able to settle down a little bit and have a, you know, one place. And then I think you did the Broadway Cats for 4 years, right?
Three and a half years. Yeah. I was the longest running Gus in the production.
Wow.
I hope you're having a jellicle ball. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
That's kind of fascinating to me. You know, what's so funny is the way our minds think is when, as you were saying that, you're thinking about this from a family and roots and stable income. And I'm sitting here going, wow, you know, that's got to be so interesting with being able to think about all the different ways you could think about Gus's backstory and how you could play it differently every night. And all, you know, like I'm thinking from right. the character development side of this, which I think is a good segue of the, you were the longest running guest. And so when you're doing that and you're playing a role that is like, I think what's so interesting about Cats and why this, really this podcast has been able to exist is because I can have this similar conversation, but it's also so different conversation so many times, is that there's not a direct answer to most things. And I think when you've done this and you did this for almost 6-7 years total, and most of the time as Bus and Gus, how did you, over those times, like, did you play with kind of what Gus's backstory is and what his like history is to keep it fresh? Like, or was it already becoming fresh because you had different people come in and out and that gave you different relationships to play with and stuff like that? Like, as an actor, how do you go about that when you're doing a role for so long?
Well, the simple answer is that it's never exactly the same production ever. You never will have that same audience again. You'll never have the same orchestra, their subs and stuff, people on stage. There's always a dynamic that can change. And if you start to change your character or what you perceive as what you're giving as your character on stage because you perceive the audience is not getting it or appreciating it or whatever it is, you start to change it, you get into a very slippery slope there where you lose the nucleus of what your character is. So when I developed my characters, that I only wavered a very few things, just fine tune them or change them a little bit. And I'd always take notes. I was a good note taker. And so you would have people that would come in, either the choreographer or the director or whomever, the production supervisor, and each of them would have notes, and sometimes they would be contradictory. So depending on the person that was there, you'd be doing that note. But the show constantly changed, and you change with that. And I think that the core of my character stayed the same. But I will say that on Broadway, doing the show as long as I did on Broadway, I had a chance to really explore exactly what the core of that character was. Number one, because in the Winter Garden there, you are so close to the audience, and you even have people that are seated on the stage there who are behind you in that number, and it is you on stage with the spotlight. And you are as naked as an actor can be there. It's all you. And that's such a responsibility to hold that in your hand. And when I first came into the show, and Stanley Lebowski was the musical director, and they called him the little Nazi, he was such a strong and prominent character and feared by everyone. And I told him, I said, please give me notes. I want to be the best I can. Please do not make me look like a fool on stage. And he said, I would never do that. But he says, you have to give people the core of what the text is. Tell the story. Just tell the story, and the rest will be done for you because the music and everything else. And that's what the challenge is every night, is to tell the story, period.
Did you think a lot about, like, I think what's so unique about Cats is it's a world that was built that has some things in the text, like you're saying, that's very definitive, and then a whole lot that's just a lure that's like telephone, as you hear, and as you said, changes and could be a different person. And hearing you say you got contradictory things is the most interesting piece for me, because I'm hearing that already. I'm hearing this person is the mom and this person's not the mom, and this could be your sister, this is not your sister. So how much did you try to take as fact what was your Gus, especially? Like, what was the relationships that you played that you were, this was my interpretation, absolutely, no one could tell me otherwise?
You mean, was there anything I was married to?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
In my performance?
I think, when I think about Gus, and I think about, there's a relationship with Joey Lorem, and then there's some potential other, like, what's the relationship with Old Deuteronomy, and all the different characters. And then there's, there's some of these unwritten thoughts to this. Is Joey your caretaker or not? Is it your potential daughter or niece, or what is that version? And it's so unique because you just hear so many different answers to that question. And
well, you know, we at different points were given, you know, we were given exposés about what the people in charge had figured was the backstory for each of these characters. You know, with Demeter, you know, being assaulted by McCavity and all this stuff, and Tugger having, you know, relationship with Bi. I mean, it's all, you know, everything is contrived. This is for people, especially because we had a lot of young people, you know, who were green, very good dancers, very good gymnasts, that sort of stuff, athletic and whatever, but they were green as far as stage performers. And they were having to tell a story of a story that was very, how shall we say, light in what the weight of what the text is. It's, you know, it's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. You know, it's poems. And so you have to, the people on stage, especially when the choreography is, you know, injected into it, there has to be a motivation for them to do something other than a choreographer telling them go from A to B. You know, if they know that they're supposed to be afraid of this cat, or they're supposed to, you know, be isolating this one or ignoring that one or hate that one or whatever, they gave us this to give us a sort of a path that we could go on. So everybody was kind of on the same page.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I think that's what's fascinating about it is that you have some ability to tweak within the realm of the world. Like there's obviously, you know, you can't completely change a personality or a staging, but you could one day play that this is maybe sister or friend. And that's not that different. And that's where we have a little bit of that freedom.
Right, right. There was definitely a hierarchy in the cat's world. There was always, you know, not just the fact that, you know, there were principal contracts and ensemble contracts, but the fact that there were characters, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with what happened initially in the show, that Equity came in after the show was mounted and decided who was going to be principals and who was not going to be principals. Because it was kind of like Chorus Line, it originated as a favored nations contract where everyone would get the same salary. And that, you know, Equity came in and said, no, that didn't work. So some of the people, like, for instance, Bomb Ballerina, Demeter, Jelly Lorem, those three girls, I think, should have been principal characters, but they weren't. So they were featured, and therefore, they got run-of-the-play contracts. So Marlena Danielle, who was the original Bomb Ballerina, was the only actor who made it to the very end.
Yeah. And so that is, I did not know that history. And it's kind of interesting because when I did my first 10 episodes leading up to the movie, I was trying to figure out which 10 you do. And I just kind of went on who sings their songs. Yeah. Who has a song about themselves, but that's right. Not when you see it, that's not really, but Buster Jones is a perfect example. He's got a song, but it's part of
right.
His friend Gus. And
right.
And so there is that's kind of a fascinating piece. I'd never thought about that. And again, I don't think that much about the mechanics of the Broadway world of this. I've thought right. So much about the Jellicles, like purely
right.
The Jellicles,
right.
which makes this show really interesting when I learn pieces like that of how do you think about that? How do you, you know, how did Equity come up with those decisions? And then, you know, does it feel right or not? That's always up for
right.
Debate.
Right.
I want to pivot to Phantom.
Okay.
Because this is, you know, this has been a fun, will be the last episode of Styx where I have talked to what I've called the Phantom Cats. And, you know, I think there's an obvious, with the shows and two Andrew Weber shows and two shows I've run for a long time on Broadway, you know, it makes sense that there's a crossover, but they're also so vastly different shows. So, you know, you've been in Phantom for a while and, have done a couple different roles, but tell me about your like Phantom history of how you know, originally kind of got your first taste of it, and then, you know, you've been on Broadway, and then especially with now with it closing on Broadway, how that's been.
All right. Well, I was doing Cats, and I stayed till the Record Breaker, which was in 97. And so when it got to the spring of 98, I was like, there's nothing more I can do with the show. I've done everything that I can possibly do. So I was looking for something to change. And there was an opening in the ensemble of Phantom. And my musical director and Katz was a musical director in Phantom as well. And so I auditioned for that spot and was offered an ensemble role. And I went into the company and decided to stay with, with the contract that would last for the run of the play and not have to worry about getting renewed every 6 months as a principal. So that was a nice relief.
Yeah. So it's the 98 time frame. Like, is this at the end of the Katz run?
It was 1998. They lasted for another 3 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After that. Yeah.
Okay.
And I, you know, it was a big, huge celebration because that was the first show to break Chorus Line's record, which they had held for a long time. It was, I think, 15 years it had run. So it was a huge, huge, huge deal. So everybody that ever had anything to do with Katz and all the people that were there, you know, in the former cast and everything were there. It was quite monumental. And I was so happy to be able to be in that company. It was amazing.
Yeah. So you basically go from Katz to Phantom. It's Android Rubber to Android Weber, but again, really different shows. So what was
This is the fourth. I've done four shows of Weber's. I did three companies of Joseph back in the early 80s. I did a national tour, the fourth national tour of Evita in 1985. So this was my fourth company of Weber. So Weber has always been very, very good to me.
Yeah.
and I appreciate, everything that he's done, but I like his music. I love singing his music. Mm. And you are absolutely correct in the diversity of all four of those, how different it is. And, you know, my exposure to that, I was used to, I knew the show very well. I knew the music. I'd sung all of the Phantom stuff in concerts and whatever, you know, for benefits and that sort. So I was familiar with the music. So it was very easy for me to go into that show also because I didn't have to dance like I danced in Katz.
Yeah.
So that in itself was a completely different mindset. Because all of a sudden I was in a group of actors. Not that the Katz people weren't actors, but they were dancers first, you know, and then they were great actors on top of that. Well, the people in Phantom were great singers first and then actors and then dancers. So you have that, except for a ballet course, of course. But you have that, and it was a wonderful change for me to be able to feel like I could relax in a show and not feel like I was under the microscope all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure the first time that you went out, you didn't have to do a 13 minute Joel Cabal straight through dance number. You're probably thrilled to not have to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing, and not have to have your unitard peeled off of you every night. It's a whole different mindset, and you know, it's great. I've had an incredible time in Phantom. You know, I wouldn't have been there had it not been for Katz.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about now. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about how, you know, for me Phantom was kind of it always been something that's like, oh, I'll just see it eventually. You know, it's and I think a lot of people on in New York are like that, which it's been such
Absolutely.
A staple. And then this announcement comes, and I think, you know, now it's sold out and people are ready to see it. It got extended again. But what was it, what was the moment like when you kind of heard that and that it just kind of came as a shock to especially the fans, but being someone working on the show, what was that like for you?
Well, I've been out of the show since August 6th. I was on for my understudy, which is Andre, one of the opera managers, the new opera managers. I was on the 11th stair of the Masquerade set and tripped over the cape that I was wearing and fell to the deck and ripped the quadriceps off of my knee. So I won't go back into the show until March 6th. So the initial closing of the show, when they announced it, was February 18th. A friend of mine texted me who was in the show, and she said, Phantom is closing February 18th. And I was like, yeah, right. And she said, no, it's real. And so at that point, I was like, I'm never going to do another Phantom performance. That's it. I'm done. But then they extended it. And so I'm going back into Phantom for the last 6 weeks of the run.
Yeah, that's what a weird fate almost. It's like, you know, this is, it was going to be, a, you know, almost a farewell that you didn't get to really say goodbye to. And then
absolutely.
Now you're getting the chance to kind of go in and close versus the injury kind of preventing that, which is, you know, again, unique.
Right, right, right. Exactly. You know, people were saying, well, you had a great exit.
Yeah.
I was kind of going, that's not the way I wanted to exit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you never want to go out that way. You always want to go out your own way. And so it's, I'm glad that you're getting the chance to do that.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, it's been, you know, when they decide to extend it, I was like, oh, should I go back? Should I go back? Because I've been working on my, you know, therapy, and because I dance in the show, I'm in a little band, I dance around. So I have to be able to move. And so I've been really working on my therapy to get myself back in there. And I'm going to be ready to go back into the show March 6th, and I'll have a great, you know, it'll be a great, great cherry on the cake.
Yeah. Well, this episode is airing right before that. So everyone listening to this, you got about a week, I think, if you're listening to it on the first couple of days of it being available, to go get your tickets. And then you'll have, I think, a month and a half after that, unless there's another extension, to go see.
There won't be another extension. We've already been told that. They're planning a complete renovation of the Majestic Theater. Mm. They're you know, redoing it, and they're getting ready. I'm sure, you know, another show will go in there soon. But you know, you can imagine what the stuff is that's underneath the sets and all that stuff, which hasn't been able to be cleaned in 35 years. So who knows what
time?
Who knows what they'll find down there?
That is it's going to be, you know, it's going to be an interesting one, because I don't, again, I just don't think people expected it, but I'm glad that you get to kind of close it out.
I'm excited. I know people that have seen it before and it's meant something special to them are trying to, you know, revisit that one more time before it goes. So it's sad, but I'll tell you, it's been an amazing show, and there'll never be anything like it. Mm-hmm. I really believe that, and, you know, it's, you know, because it's part of my life now. I mean, it's been a major portion of my life. And so I give all the respect to everybody that I've ever worked for in this production, and it's been supportive of me and everything, that I can't be thankful enough, express my. So I feel very, very, very fortunate to be able to go in and do that. And so I hope everybody can come see the show if they can find a ticket.
Yeah, if you can grab one or play the lottery, there's
whatever
ways to still go see it for the remaining few weeks.
And I will tell you, the show is still as beautiful and crisp as it ever was. And when we came and rebooted the show, when we came back and opened October 22nd of 21, there was such a freshness in the show and such a new vision that they had created that made the show even brighter and crisper than it had been. And a lot of people noticed the change. And it was something that I think a lot of people were excited about, seeing the kind of, 2.0 Phantom. And that's I think has been instrumental in having people appreciate the show for so long, because I think that, you know, they've added so much and subtracted stuff through the years and everything, but the core of it has remained the same, and it'll always be iconic.
Yeah, and
always
that's what's been, you know, cool for these episodes I've done recently, is it's like it's two iconic shows that you get to we get to talk about, two
right,
these just like super well-known, lengthy staples of Broadway and of the theater community. And so it's cool to kind of get to have some episodes that talk about both of them.
Right, Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the both of them. And I think, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber at the time that Cats was running had Starlight and Phantom going at the same time. So he had multiple shows, you know, going, especially in the 80s. And, you know, he, those are the shows you wanted to get cast in. And again, you had the opportunity to go to other companies because it was so popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, they're still going. So, I want to pivot back to do a quick rapid fire, but this is going to go back to Cats. So put your Cats, now back on, put your ears back on. So the rapid fire, who, if you could go on for one night only, whether you're capable of doing it, singing, dancing, male, female, any cat, who would you want to play for one night?
Which cat would I want to play for one night?
One night, yep.
Tugger.
Tugger. Just go out there and recap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or
it's,
your...
it's the in-your-face, it's the in-your-face character. Then I like it.
It's one of the most common answers.
Oh, yeah. And Tugger could get away with anything. You know, when you have a unitard that's shaded like that, and you look like you do just because of the shading on your unitard, trust me, you're going to use that as much as you can.
Yeah, just go out there and wreak havoc, live your life, don't care.
Exactly, exactly. That's the inner Gus.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. Who are your favorite and least favorite cats, like characters?
Characters? Let me see. Who is my least favorite? Well, I'm going to have to say Gumby.
Gumby, okay.
I mean, I love the actress, but I just hated that character. And I just thought it was ridiculous. I mean, come on. You have, number one, you have a cat that's so fat she can barely move, and she's actually doing a tap dance with, you know. I can't. Anyway, I can't go.
It's fun to hear where it does, because there's so many variety of characters. That's like one.
Oh yeah.
What about favorite?
I also Bomb Ballerina
is favorite.
It's one of my favorites. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she's the sex kitten. You know, she's the one. She's the, you know, when she, I mean. Her and Demeter together in that McCavity number is just so friggin' hot. And, you know, they always cast Bomb Ballerina, that curvy, sexy, hot.
Tall, usually tall.
With that smoky voice and stuff. And you just, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, you have a sex pot on stage. And she, you know, she worked it. And Marlena, you know, props to her. She's doing that for 18 years. I tell you, she has still had it together at the end.
Yeah, it's such a number. It's such a number, too, because it's, you know, I just saw it recently on stage on tour. And, you know, there's not that many times where it's really one or two cats on stage. It's Mungo Jerry and Malteser and the two of them. And so your whole focus is on the two of them doing that number during the McCavity.
Absolutely.
Tour. And it really does kind of take over the stage, and it is to your point, it's an extremely sexual number, and it's kind of fun to see and watch, and but then to think about the backstories too of like what that number represents is,
oh, absolutely,
is unique, but
yeah, absolutely.
What about favorite song from Cats?
Favorite song? My song? Are you kidding?
Okay, I love
Gus
the
It's a beautiful melody. It's a very sentimental song, and I love it just because of the melody. You know, I just think it's beautiful. It reminds me of a lullaby.
Yeah. What here's my fun rapid fire question is putting on my Phantom hat. Which cat do you think would haunt a theater the best?
I'll tell you, Buster Jones, because he's looking at all the garbage cans back there in the alley. The Majestic and the Golden and the Jacobs right there. He's the one that's
going to... You know, I have two answers for this, because I've asked everybody and I've thought about it a lot. And I thought, originally, I was like, oh, it's got to be McCavity, right? Like, that's the one that's kind of could be there. But then I thought about it, I thought Buster too, because I was like, you know who's going to be so mad if you take their box seat? It's going to be Esther.
Exactly. Exactly. I've known those people. I've known Buster for Jones, yeah. Especially in the theater. I've known so many Buster for Jones. So, but that was something, you know, the thing about my role in Cats was the fact that I got to play three distinctly different characters. And I think that I honestly believe that my track was the best in the show, because you got to do the trifecta of acting. If you could do that, you got to do three completely different characters in one two and a half hour show. I loved it.
Yeah.
Even if they're small. Yep. You know, even if they're small, I mean, it's hard for costume change and makeup change and all stuff. You know, I had to change makeup for each of those characters. So, but yeah, I loved Cats. I would never trade my experience for anything. It got me to where I am today, and without a doubt.
Definitely. All right, we're here to the most important question, and I know you're siding with me, so I'm excited to hear your argument. But I've argued at length that I don't think Grisabelle is the right Jellicle choice. It sounds like you agree with me. So who are you picking? Who's your Jellicle choice?
Really? Do I need to answer that? Let's just talk about stage time alone. let's just put it down to stage time, okay? Nothing else. Who has the most stage time in the whole entire show?
That's a good question. Is it Monka's Trap? Mm. Who actually has the most stage time? I don't know the answer to that.
Me. I think it's Gus. I think it's Gus Brown Tiger, Buster for Jones. I think it's that track.
That track can have, I guess you dance the opening number, you're on for, yeah. I mean, it's very, yeah. I was trying to think if anybody else is through all of the rest.
Well, Monka's Trap is on stage most of the time. You know, he's a narrator. So, of course, he's going to be on stage a lot. But I just don't know quantity, but, you know, I'm just talking about quality.
Quality. I will tell you, you're the most common, Gus is the most common answer that's not Grisabella.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true, you know. And Gus is one of the, see, because I think that because Gus is introduced at the top of the second act by Deuteronomy, I think it's kind of like, you know, kind of a gotcha thing for the audience, because I think that Gus is the obvious choice that's going to be there. Number one, he's the oldest, you know, of the tribe, I believe, and it's, you know, he deserves it. You know, he's worked hard as an actor and done his.
I'm of the mindset that he should go this year and Grisabelle can go next year.
No, she's not ever going to go. She can't get up the heavy side layer with those heels on.
You know what? I'm all for this. I've been, you know, everyone's slowly trying to like work me towards picking Grisabelle. And I'm like, yeah, she can go next year. And you're just like, nope, never.
Nope. Never. She's not going to do it. Nope. Not going to do it.
Okay. I'm with you.
Nope. Was wrong from the beginning. It was wrong.
Send her back out. Send her back out of the tribe. Just send her back to McCavity's gang. And she can hang out there. No, not being, no redemption story here.
Exactly. Well, if there had been a Cats 2, you know, I think Gus might have been chosen then, because Grisabelle had already been sent out to the Netherland, right? And into the ether, Netherland, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Gus has got to go. I think there's a, it's such a fascinating, if you try to think, the most interesting questions I think right now still are is, who was actually last year's choice? And then what are your next like five choices? Like, how do you make that decision? I ask every old Deuteronomy that, because I challenge old Deuteronomies in the sense of like, do you have a consistent criteria, or do you just make this up as you go? Like, when, how does this work? Like, it seems like it's just winging it. If you've already decided and then all of a sudden somebody comes in and you're just going to change your mind 5 seconds before the ending, you know, it seems a little misguided. It seems very whimsical.
Well, it sounds manipulative to me. It's what I think it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing, I mean, you know, the relationship between Gus and Deuteronomy is not strong enough to overcome the fact that Deuteronomy feels like that, you know, this old haggard piece of whatever needs to be shot off in space.
I love this. I've always thought I was the most anti-Grisabelle. It sounds like you're right up there with me of this. So this has been phenomenal.
You know, I don't understand a lot of musicals that you have people that come out on stage literally for 12 minutes in the entire show, and they're the lead character.
Yeah, very princess track.
Yeah, it's like everybody talks about this person, you know, this character in third person, and then she finally appears, and I go, really? That's it?
Yeah.
You know, no. Next time you watch this show, just get a time clock, you know, just a, you know, stopwatch and time it, just time the stage time, or just go, you know, onto YouTube and count it. And you'll see Gus was robbed.
I'll watch the 98 movie and see if I can get a counter. I'm sure the Junkyard and the fans, the cast fans, someone's probably timed this out already. And so if anybody has it, send it my way. I'm sure there's a stage time counter basically that everyone has. And it's definitely not Grisabel winning. She's at the bottom on the other side.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, this has been so fun. I love the passionate anti-Grisabella argument here. And I'm so glad that you get to, you know, to go back into Phantom to
thanks a lot
show.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Amazing. Thank you. Yes, it's a great show, and it has changed my life. So yeah. I'm very, very happy. Both of those shows, Phantom and Cats, have both changed my life. So, you know, I owe all of my gratitude to those people that have made it possible. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, doing your podcasting debut, and being an amazing guest.
Thank you, Ike. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else to listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.